Let's turn our attention to God's Word from Joshua chapters 5 and then chapter 6. I'm going to begin reading in Joshua chapter 5, verse 13. I'm using the New International Version. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went up to him and asked, "Are you for us or for our enemies?" "Neither," he replied, "but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." Then Joshua fell face downward to the ground in reverence and asked him, "What message does my Lord have for his servant?" The commander of the Lord's army replied, "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. Now Jericho was tightly shut up because of the Israelites. No one went out and no one came in. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing the trumpets. When you hear them sound a long blast on the trumpets, have all the people give a loud shout. Then the wall of the city will collapse and the people will go up, every man straight in." I'll stop reading there just for the sake of time, but I do want you to notice some of what the rest of Joshua 6 is all about, is Joshua and the people actually do follow the guidance and leadership of the Lord. It's a great privilege to be with you, and I do bring you greetings from a host of people in the Presbyterian Church in America who have followed your progress over the last many weeks, who have been praying for you, who have been concerned and wanting to be of help, wanting to stand with you in whatever ways possible. What you're doing is a wonderful, remarkable movement of God's grace and power. You feel the energy when you come in this place. The church is not the building. You know that. The church is the people. You are the people. This is the church. We are the assembly of God gathered here this morning. And you know what? You can tell the Lord is among you. And wonderful things are happening. And so I do bring you greetings and encouragement from many people. Well, I've had the privilege of traveling in Europe and Africa and Asia, but it's about time, for the first time in my life, I came to that other continent, Texas. I've never been here before. Came flying in, as I said, about 12:30 this morning. Had a view of Dallas from the airplane. And then Alan and Jim kindly drove me through the center of your beautiful city, gleaming glass. It's a wonderful and beautiful place for me to see for the first time. It's a stunning sight. Well, there was another city that I want us to think about this morning. A city that must have been a stunning sight as well. But this city had a problem. It guarded the way to the promised land. Joshua and the people were engaged in a great battle to defeat this city and open the way to the land. Joshua had to learn that the battle would be waged in some ways that were unexpected, in some ways that he did not anticipate, and that the instrument, the primary instrument of the battle to which God had called Joshua and the people, was not a military battle, but a battle of faith. And he needed to learn a few things about faith. And so do we. 6 of them, in fact. I've written them down on a little blue sheet. Some of you have this, and if it's useful to you to follow along, great. If not, you can just forget it. The first thing that Joshua and the people needed to learn about faith was that faith remembers the promises of God. In chapter 5, most of which I did not read this morning, Israel prepares to enter the promised land of Canaan. And as they do, God commands them to do 2 things. To circumcise those males who through 40 years of traveling in the desert had never received circumcision. And the second thing was to celebrate the Passover. Circumcision and Passover are what? They're the sacraments of the Old Testament, just as baptism and the Lord's Supper are the sacraments of the New Testament. What is it that sacraments do? Why do we as God's people celebrate the sacraments? The sacraments help us remember the promises of God. The sacraments are those things that help us remember what it is God has done for us in the past. The sacraments are those things that put us in a frame of mind to be mindful of who God is and all of the wonderful things that He's done for us so that we can be strengthened for the task ahead. And just as Joshua and the people are entering the land of Canaan, they need to be fortified for the task ahead. And the greatest fortification comes as they remember who God is and they remember what His promises are. Faith remembers the promises of God. You know, perhaps the father of fathers on this Father's Day, the father of fathers in the whole of the Bible is whom? It's Abraham. We read about him in the responsive reading a few moments ago. In Romans chapter 4, it says about Abraham, against all hope, Abraham hoped and believed and so became the father of many nations. Just as it had been said to him, so shall your offspring be. Without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and that of Sarah's womb was also dead. Yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God. But he was strengthened in his faith and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had the power to do what he promised. God has the power to do what he promises. What are some of the promises that God has made to us as His people? That He has a plan for you and for me. That nothing can thwart His plan. That God has put His loving, graceful attention on us. And He's going to lead us all the way through the struggles and the difficulties of this life, whatever those struggles and difficulties are. And He's going to lead us to a greater promised land than Canaan. He's going to lead us to heaven itself. And nothing can ultimately dislodge God's plan for us. Those are His promises. Faith remembers the promises of God, especially as a big new endeavor is about ready to take place. The people were about ready to take the land. You're about ready and in the process of doing some wonderful new venture here. And as you move into it, you need to grasp a hold of the promises of God. Believe that God is for you. Believe that God is not against you. And believe that His Spirit of power is going to be with you as you move into the future that He's giving you. That's the first thing. The second thing that Joshua and the people needed to learn is that faith submits to the lordship of Christ in the face of insurmountable odds and false gods. As Joshua crossed the Jordan River to the Promised Land, what does he see? A land flowing with milk and honey? Not really. He sees a city, a huge, monstrous city with double thick walls, with gates all tightly shut up. The people in Jericho were waiting for the Israelites to come. No one came in and no one came out. It was a fortified and strong city. It was the first line of defense for Canaan. No one could enter the promised land of Canaan without getting past Jericho. And the Canaanites could easily defend themselves and the whole land from within their walls. As a man who had spent the last 40 years in the desert, Joshua must have been overwhelmed by the sight of Jericho. Just as I would imagine a fellow from the plains of West Texas would be overwhelmed with the sight of Dallas. Joshua was in deep meditation about his problem. Perhaps he was planning strategy. Perhaps he had the generals there with him. Fellows, how are we going to do this? We've got to figure out a way to take this city. We're not going to get the land if we don't take this city. Maybe they're scratching some military proposals in the dirt. And he looks up and he sees a man with a drawn sword. Joshua says, I don't recognize you. Who are you? Whose side are you on? And the answer is startling. Chapter 5, verse 14, neither, he replied, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. You would have expected this figure to say, I'm on your side. But he didn't. The captain of the army of the Lord doesn't come to defend the Israelites or the Canaanites. He's not a scout for Joshua or for Jericho. He's commander of God's army. He's the captain of the hosts of the Lord. Every biblical scholar I know says that this is an Old Testament appearance of the Lord Jesus Christ. This is shown because Joshua calls him my Lord. Because the ground is holy, and Joshua takes off his shoes and he proceeds to give absolute commands to Joshua, and Joshua obeys them. "I'm not on their side nor on yours," he says, "but I've come as the captain of the Lord's army." I'm reminded of Saddam's taunt to President Bush during the Gulf War: "God is on our side." And of course, if we're honest, we have to remember that President Bush responded similarly. But the question isn't, is God on our side? But are we on God's side? Do we submit to His lordship? The captain of the Lord of hosts didn't come to take sides. He came to take over. And Joshua's response was the correct one. He fell face down and said, what do you have for your servant to do? Faith, you see, doesn't always know what to do, but faith obeys the one who does. Faith is submitting to the lordship of Christ in the face of insurmountable odds. Joshua gazed at the walls of Jericho. How could they be overcome? How could the task be accomplished? We gaze at the walls of our problems. Perhaps there's a serious medical problem. Perhaps my marriage has seen better days. Perhaps I think that I survived my adolescence, but I doubt if I'm going to survive my kids' adolescence. Perhaps my business has fallen on hard times. Perhaps my future's uncertain. Or maybe it's certain, but it's fearful. How can the problems of our lives be overcome? Joshua gazed at the walls, and we gaze at the walls of our problems. How can it be done? But the biggest problem for Israel wasn't just Jericho. It's what Jericho represented. If Israel was going to possess the land of Canaan, they had to dispossess the Canaanites. And that meant they had to get through Jericho. It was not just a military fort that stood in the way. Jericho was more than a military stronghold. It was a spiritual stronghold. It was a symbol of all of the false gods of Canaan. Many commentators have said that Jericho was the center of the Canaanite moon goddess, and she was worshipped there. And so as Joshua was preparing for doing battle with Jericho, he was really preparing for a spiritual power encounter as well. And when God destroys Jericho, he's defeating all the false gods of his time. Like Joshua, if we're going to possess the land, we need to do battle with the false gods of our own time. We must dispossess them in the name of the commander. What are some of those false gods? I've written a few down for you to think about, for me to think about. One, of course, is possessions. It's hard to resist the spirit of the age that tells us that the fellow who wins is the fellow who has the most marbles at the end of the day. Or prominence, power, the joy of influence. Or pleasure. I can think of at least four different varieties of pleasure. Comfort, just seeking my own comfort. Painlessness. Have you ever thought of that? It's actually a god today, the elimination of all pain. Sensuality in many forms, and specifically in a fourth place, sexuality. Clearly a god of our age. Some of us who don't have much money, power, or sex appeal might think in terms of two other gods of this age. One would be prowess, intellectual ability. Another might be place, significance, approval in the eyes of others. As false gods, these things replace the true God in people's hearts, so that instead of saying, life has meaning and I have worth because I know the true God, instead I say, my life has meaning and I have worth because I have more marbles or a bigger place or more pleasure. As false gods, these things are idols in the hearts of people. And there are idols in the hearts of people in the city where we live. We cannot take the city with these gods in place. We must believe that. Faith submits to the lordship of Christ in the face of false gods and insurmountable odds. Third thing that Joshua and the people need to learn is that faith seeks the presence of the Lord as the means of victory. The presence of the Lord, that's what's needed. In chapter 6, the way the Lord gave Jericho into Joshua's hands is described. It's really a bizarre description. The people are to march around the city once a day for 6 days. As they go, 7 priests are to carry 7 jubilee trumpets before the ark, which implies that the ark is being carried around the city in solemn procession. The ark is very important in all of this. What is the ark? What is it? It's the presence of the Lord. And as the ark was carried around Jericho for 7 days, it's the presence of the Lord himself who is encircling and besieging the city. You must see that. It's not just Jericho being combated by the armies of Joshua. It's the Lord himself who is in the midst. And it's the presence of the Lord who is doing the battle. The trumpets are not so much musical instruments, but they're instruments of heralding. They announce the presence of the Lord who is in or with the ark. And for the Israelites, the trumpets means that he's present to lead them and to lead the people to triumph. For those who live in Jericho, the trumpets mean what? It's the sound of judgment. Some commentators say that the walls fell down because there must have been an earthquake or a falling away of the earth by some form of erosion. But the walls don't give way to earthquakes, but to the presence of the Lord. It's the presence of the Lord that makes victory come. Think of this in your own life. In so many of your problems, don't we as believers really seek solutions, often by borrowing the methods of the false gods of our age? And so we rely ultimately on our possessions or our prominence or our pleasure or prowess or our place. In the Church of Jesus Christ today, how much is done by the arm of the flesh? And how much more needs to be done in the power of the Lord's own presence? The boldest plans for Park City's Presbyterian Church are not going to come from human ingenuity. They're going to come from finding the Lord in our midst and finding out what his presence demands in the city of Dallas and what he is calling you people to do. The deepest issues in our lives, they're not resolved because we get this solution or that solution, are they? What really brings resolution to your life? It's the presence of Jesus. It's the reality of Christ in your heart. And dear friends, hear me now. The problem is that our hearts are too crowded with too many things. Sometimes the false gods of the age have crept into our hearts too. And in our hearts, any room left for Jesus and his presence is squeezed out. For the last few summers, we've been going to the beach with some dear friends. And often when we're there over a Sunday, we have a little worship service together, 5 or 6 families. Last summer, I usually try and pass the leading that service around to some of the others, but last summer it fell to me. We have church in a gazebo that overlooks the Atlantic Ocean, a big open place, and the kids and I went up and we made a big, huge heart out of beach towels. And then I asked the kids and the adults to bring up to the gazebo for our worship service some of the things that fill their hearts. It was interesting to see as one by one people put into the towel-shaped heart different things. Some of the kids put in a surfboard. One of the guys put in a Nintendo. One of the pretty little girls put in a dress. Another fellow put in a boombox. My son carried a television set up from the condo. The adults, one man put in his wallet. A lady put in her credit card. A physician put in his stethoscope, indicating how much his profession had taken over his heart. And someone else put in a pair of glasses, which they explained was a way of their saying that one of their gods in their heart was how people looked at them and viewed them. And when the beach towel-shaped heart was full of all these things, I said, there's no more room in the heart, is there? There's no more room in our heart for Jesus. Do you know the little song, I've got the love of Jesus, down in my heart. Down in my heart, down in my heart. Do we? If our hearts are so crowded with so many things, there's no room for the love of Jesus. And we need real conviction, men and women, that our lives are not constituted by things or place or prominence, but it is the Lord's presence who gives us life. And we need to make room for Him. Faith remembers the promises of God. Faith submits to the Lordship of Christ in the face of overwhelming odds. Faith seeks the presence of the Lord as the means of victory. Faith often involves changing some usually expected patterns. Let me just be very brief. What a ridiculous way to take a city. Seven trumpets, 7 days, seventh day, seven times around, blowing trumpets. I mean, can you imagine if someone came to the meeting, Harry, of your transition committee and said, we've got the plan for how we're going to take Dallas. Get out the trumpets and we're going to march around Dallas for 7 days. And someone might say, well, as a matter of fact, we sort of had a citywide evangelistic campaign in mind, or we were going to try and reach the leaders of Dallas. But Joshua insists that the plan is given by God. And here's my challenge, friends. What is the plan God is giving you? Find it, seek it, pray for it. Wait for the Lord. That's the next point. I'll combine it in here. Faith often means that we need to demonstrate patience, because waiting for the plan of God means patience. Don't rush off. May I just encourage you, don't rush off just to be a church. Wait and see what God has for you. Do you know that all over this nation, people have their eyes upon you? What's the little ditty I learned as a kid? The eyes of Texas are upon you. Well, the eyes of this country are upon you Texans. They really are. At least some Presbyterian eyes. You have a wonderful opportunity to do things differently. To wait for the Lord to give you His plan. And if it's His plan, grasp it by faith. For nothing will be able to defeat it. Last point, faith is compelled by risk. God's methods require a degree of risk. In fact, if you know that you're moving in the right direction when you're having to risk something. You folks know a lot about that already. Let's work on this last point for just a minute. In the midst of risk, what do we know we need? We need Jesus. We need His presence. We need His power. Risk requires faith. I need faith when there's a chance of failure. Your family doesn't change without your exercising faith. Your professional life doesn't grow without faith. Your church isn't going to grow without faith. The future doesn't happen from God's perspective without faith. The question is not, how do I get my life, my church, my family into a safe, secure place? That is the wrong question. The question is, how do I stay on some cutting edge where I desperately need the Lord? You know, we are risk adverse by nature. We are geared all of our lives to program and plan for risk to be eliminated from our lives. But the Lord wants us to live on a cycle of risk, dependence, and faith. The author of Hebrews says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. So we need risk and we need dependence in our lives in order to please Him. When you are out of control, when something happens in your life that you can't plan for or you can't program for, when something goes wrong, when it isn't the way you always planned it, there's the opportunity. This is great. I like this. Do you always treat your guest preachers to such sound effects, you know, accompanying their preaching? I need to have the captain of the host of the Lord apply his sword to my heart, to sever my heart's grasp on the false gods of this age, so that instead my heart will grasp the only one who makes the difference in the midst of risk. Look again at verse 15 in chapter 5. The commander of the Lord's army replied, "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy." When the captain of the Lord's army tells Joshua to take off his shoes, he's saying, take off whatever security you're counting on for your life. Be at risk without any reliance upon the gods of this age. Be at risk. Ironically, being at risk is the safest place to be. Because when we're at risk, the commander moves in on our lives and he takes over. Recently, I had lunch with two very bright, sharp men in my town. These are men who are used to being able to deal with any issue, fix any problem, solve any difficulty in their lives. And we discussed together some areas in our lives which we just can't fix and where there's nothing to do but to have faith. We discussed those situations where we're up against a wall. Maybe it's a child who's very sick. Maybe it's a marriage that's heading south. Maybe it's a business that's on its way out. At that point of risk, at that point of the failure of human ingenuity, that's the place where Jesus comes to our hearts. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell. A faith which remembered the promises of God, which submitted to the lordship of Christ in the face of insurmountable odds and false gods. A faith which sought the presence of the Lord as the means of victory. A faith which involved changing some usually expected patterns. A faith which built patience into the lives of people, and a faith which was compelled by risk. Remember during the Gulf War how all the reports back from the desert said that nobody wanted to be on the front lines. That was the most fearful place to be, right up against the border. And before the ground war started, how we all feared for those people on the front lines. We wouldn't want to be there. But in real life, we want to be on the front lines of faith. Because when we're there, we just might look up and we just might see a man with a drawn sword. And we just might hear him say that he's come to judge the false gods of our hearts. But we also might hear him say, do you see that gleaming city of glass called Dallas? By faith, it's yours. Only by faith.